So, thank you for coming this morning. Just thinking of the path we've been on for this year for most of us on the ox herding pictures, and the path that's brought us to insight meditation and our spiritual journey, and the path that connects us. So I'll start the talk. I was trying to find things that were new. We've been on this path for a whole year now, almost. And this is what I came up with. So we started our search last February with picture one. And the ox herder in picture one was a young man or a young woman at that point who was completely lost. For me, it was a woman. She knows she wants something, but she's not sure what it is. She had not found happiness in the world, and she was thinking it must be here somewhere. And so that's kind of the lost state of the first picture that we looked at. And we talked a lot at that point about how we began our spiritual path, what it was like for us. I'm going to find my notes here just a second. There we go. The 10 ox herding pictures are said to depict the stages of the path to enlightenment. And the bull was sacred in ancient India, so it's understandable that the bull would symbolize one's true self, one's Buddha consciousness, what we're our goal is, what we're want to achieve, to the place we want to be at the end of our spiritual journey. Along the path, as the ox herder comes to understand the mind more and more, the true self is revealed, while the ego or the untrue divisive self gets dismantled piece by piece. So in picture 10, we have an older, wiser, and happier ox herder who really isn't an ox herder anymore. When he comes into the world this time, he's both ordinary and extraordinary. He or she has truly changed. And I think it's helpful to look at the way the ox herder changed and the way we are changing as we practice down this spiritual path. What are some key points of change for the ox herder and for you and me? Before we talk about these key points, let's think about how we frame the changes. It's easy to idealize the state of being enlightened and get stuck comparing where we are with where a revered teacher is or where we want to be. I've been heartened recently to discover teachers saying that awakening is not a once and final thing. It might be wiser for us to think of ourselves as learners still learning life's lessons far down the path. Rodney Smith, the founding teacher of SIMS, was talking about the path to awakening recently, and he said, "I don't think we ever stop awakening. I don't." And Martine Batchelor, who we've cited many times over the course of this year, said that her teacher, Korean Zen master Kusan, had three different major awakenings. And each time he continued to practice even more. John Lurie, who's the abbot of Zen Mountain Monastery in New York, and we've talked about his commentaries a lot over the course of this year, also frequently referred to, we've frequently referred to him. He says about picture 10, the spiritual quest continues even at this stage. Now, maybe that seems disheartening, but to me, it helps me frame this path we're traveling on in just a continuous evolution. And It helps me connect that everyone at every stage, we're all learners. And we have that in common with everyone else on the path, no matter what stage they're in. Somehow framing things this way lessens my need to compare where I am with where someone else might be. So I'm going to start with going through the verses one last time. So I'm going to share the screen here and the picture. So there's our goal right there. The jolly round man and the verse who describes him or her. And notice that it's in the first person, I. So we can think of ourselves in this image and where we are in relation to that. Barefooted and naked of breast, I mingle with the people of the world. My clothes are ragged and dust laden, and I am ever blissful. I use no magic to extend my life. Now, before me, the dead trees become alive. Let's see, get my notes back here. So when I looked at each line and I thought, this is the target of where we're going, this image and this description. Barefooted and naked of breast, there's bare and naked. So at this stage, I'm undefended. I can be vulnerable. I don't need to protect my ego with defensiveness. And I know that's a goal of mine. And I notice when I am defensive. And I feel that's part of my practice to be noticing that and be vulnerable when I can be, and noticing my process of being vulnerable and not defensive. The next line, I mingle with the people of the world. I'm ordinary. I don't need to be special or stand out. I recognize my common humanity, that just like me, all beings want to be happy. And just like me, all beings don't want to suffer. And when I have difficulty being ordinary and not special, somehow the connecting with my fellow human beings, there's something that makes it easier for me to be ordinary when I think, well, that's going to connect me with other people. My clothes are ragged and dust laden. So to me, that means my happiness is independent of worldly conditions. You know, I'm all ragged and I don't have much. No adornment. And I think of the eight worldly winds and the conditions of pleasure and pain, loss and gain, fame and disrepute and praise and blame. And I think of how many times I am dependent. Those things are things that make me happy. And when I lose them, they make me unhappy. So the goal being that blissfulness does not depend on those things. And I can see myself in relation to that, and that is part of my path. I use no magic to extend my life. And that, to me, brings up surrender. I surrender to reality. I don't argue with the way things are. And the last line, now before me, the dead trees become alive. And what came up for me there was a line from a sutta that Ajahn Sumedho often quotes, and he says, open are the doors to the deathless. And then that line, I don't have anything else to say to that. That line kind of just reverberates. And I know some of the commentaries have a different interpretation, but I don't see personally how we can look at the 10th picture, the kind of ultimate stage of awakening, without talking about the deathless. So that's what comes to my mind. So these are some of the states of being in picture 10. And my guess is that you have experienced some degree of these states, and that these are aspects that you relate to in your practice. And maybe there is one area of learning that is up for you right now, and you've noticed changes moving you along the path in the direction of picture 10. So you haven't completely realized these aspects of this awakened person, but these are familiar practices, and you're a learner in these areas. So that's the way I'm going to look at the talk today. And I'm going to go back to the picture before we go on with the verse. I want to share something new that I learned about this picture. I was trying to explore some other sources, and I came upon a Zen teacher named Shinzen Young, who was telling about the ox herding pictures. And he said that he was told by one of his own Chinese Zen teachers that the roly-poly character in picture 10 was based on a real person in Chinese history who was part of an oral tradition. And this person lived in the capital of China, a city called Xi'an, during the Tang Dynasty. He was a monk and a well-known street person who hung out at the market and carried a big cloth bag, and he was called the cloth bag monk. He played with children all day. He was always friendly and approachable and always around for people. And he liked to give gifts from his bag, especially to children. It made me think of the story that Jerry talked about, if you were here last week, about the alms rounds where one of the monks received, I think it was a candy bar, and there was a little boy in line offering alms also, I think he was offering alms probably with his family. And the monk gave him the candy bar, and the little boy ran off to share it with his brothers and sisters. And so it reminded me of that. So he liked to give gifts to children. And so that image of this person here, who was well known and really fits the description of this verse, being a real person and someone that people knew about, but he was not extraordinary. You know, he wasn't, he was a celebrity in his own right, but he had the attributes of someone very ordinary that you wouldn't pay that much attention to. Yet, if you looked at the way he lived, he was actually quite extraordinary, generous, and had many qualities to admire. The emperor of China at that time was a Buddhist monk. No, it was a Buddhist, sorry, and a meditator. And he had his own preceptor, our teacher. One morning, the preceptor said to the emperor, I want to let you know that the most enlightened subject in your kingdom died this morning. And the emperor asked, who? And the imperial teacher said, the cloth bag monk. So that's the story that was given. And it may or may not be true, but it was associated with real emperor in a real place. And it kind of fits the idea of the qualities that are in the verse. I know Rodney Smith said recently that he felt he had met, he kind of described an enlightened being like this picture here. And he said that he thought he had met a couple of times an enlightened person, but this was not a person that, you know, had a title next to their name, enlightened person. It was like someone he met on the street or in a public place. So that gives me pause and appreciation of what it really is to be enlightened. So this person here is not a god. Traditionally, that is who we think of as enlightened. It's just an ordinary, friendly, generous mingler, available to people and with gifts to give. And maybe since you started out on your path, you've started to become aware of some gifts of your own practice that you can share and have shared with others. Some gifts that you weren't aware of maybe before, and maybe you didn't even consider sharing before. And that this is part of how you've changed on the path from the beginning to now. I know for me, the fact that the cloth bag monk spent a lot of his time playing with children caught my attention. Maybe like me, in the process of meditating, you've become aware of how much time you spend planning and preparing for what's coming, getting your ducks in a row and making sure everything goes just right. Maybe you've noticed that you can take that can take the liveliness, the aliveness out of life, and that you miss the wonder out of the present moment. I've been reading Thich Nhat Hanh's journals, and actually I've been reading them over and over, and I have seen this quality in him of playfulness, and appreciated that. And I thought myself that maybe I need to start shedding some of my busyness and worry and need to control and find more time to relax, more spontaneity, and being able to play more easily. So that may not be something that I thought about when I started this path, that it would be nice to be more playful. That's part of the spiritual journey. But when I look at the story of this monk, and when I look at I think it's the cover of the book of Desmond Tutu and the Dalai Lama called Joy, and they just look so playful, and they look so available to joy and to the moment. I think that's a quality that maybe is part of learning on the spiritual path leading to liberation. So I don't think it's accidental that the cloth bag monk spent a lot of time playing with children. And an example that impressed me was Thich Nhat Hanh. When he was in his mid-30s, he went on a vacation. Someone offered him their cabin, and he went on a vacation from his studies. He was teaching at Columbia or Princeton or somewhere. And he was right next to a camp, and he ended up spending his whole summer playing with these teenagers, doing all their camp activities. And I just thought that was pretty cool to be so open to joy and fun and spending your time that way. So let's move on to the qualities of this monk. And or not this monk, the liberated awakened person in picture 10. So it says he's barefoot and naked of breast. So over the course of his practice, he is vulnerable and not defensive, and he's unadorned in body and image. Tim was talking about how identification with our self-image can get in the way of moving forward on the path. He said we have a choice. Do we take the wisdom road or the ego road? And when we notice we're being defensive and reactive, have we learned to pay attention and pause to acknowledge that we need to look deeper to be with the vulnerability underneath our defensiveness? So maybe over the course of your time on the path, you have looked at your vulnerability and under the surface to acknowledge and stay with the tender places and not react. And if so, you know, this is in line with this final picture. Maybe you've investigated questions like Tim suggested. What do I believe is true about this? Maybe you've journaled about your experiences of feeling defensive and reactive. Maybe you've sat with the felt sense in your body or something else. But this is all part of the path leading to this state. The next line, I mingle with the people of the world, that to me has to do with the theme of ordinariness and connection with our common humanity. There's a quote from Dilgo Khyentse Rinpoche. He says, in the valley, we have some friends whom we love, some enemies whom we hate, and all the others whom we don't know. This perception, he says, of people is distorted and limited and produces nothing but attachment and aggression. So going past that division, like Jerry talked about last week with the story of the people at gate A4 from Naomi Shihab Nye's poem, how they all joined together, people who were total strangers and connected. Also the Brahma Viharas. Some of you are probably practicing the Brahma Viharas, which works on extending our feelings of friendliness beyond our comfort zone and beyond the friends we love to include enemies we hate and neutral people we don't know. So maybe this is a focus of your practice, has been, and you've seen changes in yourself in this way. So this is moving along the path towards picture 10. In the next line, my clothes are ragged, dust laden, and I'm ever blissful. To me, this has to do with the way we find happiness and contentment. Shinzen Young said that in picture 1, we're dissatisfied with the way things are, but we don't know clearly what we're looking for. We know we want something, and we think we want happiness dependent on conditions, like a nice house, a family, fame, all those things. But as we begin to explore the path, we realize that what we really want is happiness independent of conditions. So maybe some of you have started to realize that, you know, this happiness isn't really as solid as I would like, and that you found some deeper contentment that's different than the sparkling happiness of your previous life. This is a quote from, Sogyal Rinpoche. He says, perhaps the deepest reason why we are afraid of death is because we do not know who we are. We believe in a personal, unique, and separate identity. But if we dare to examine it, we find this identity depends entirely on an endless collection of things to prop it up. Our name, our biography, partners, family, home, job, friends, credit cards. It's on their fragile and transient support we rely for our security. So maybe one of the changes that you've noticed since you began is a change in your understanding of happiness. Some things bring momentary pleasure, and other experiences bring a deeper, more pervasive contentment. Then the line, I use no magic to extend my life, to me is talking about surrender, the theme of surrender. And one of the insights along the path can be to see when we have to lay down the whip and the rope, to see the extent to which we have control and the limits of our control to make things work the way we want and keep us secure. So one of the practices the Buddha offered is the five recollections. I am of the nature to age. Aging is unavoidable. I am of the nature to get ill. Illness is unavoidable. I am of the nature to die. Death is unavoidable. All that is dear to me and everyone I love are of the nature to change. There is no way to escape being separated from them. It's hard to face giving up control, and most of us don't go down without an argument. Maybe when you started out in the path, you were young and healthy and you could postpone spending time with these recollections. Maybe you're beginning to take them seriously now, and maybe you recite them regularly as part of your practice. This is what the Buddha advised us to do, and not to make us suffer, but he told us that this practice would help us let go and lead to freedom from suffering. It seems counterintuitive, but maybe you've had a change in your perspective since you started your journey. Maybe you've experienced the tenderness of letting go. And lastly, the line, now before me, the dead trees become alive, which is the theme, seems to me, of the deathless. This path, this Dharma path we're on, points to the inexpressible, a mystery that is beyond words. And as I said before, I heard Ajahn Sumedho quote a sutta, it's called The Noble Search. And he's quoted it a number of times in his talks, open are the doors to the deathless. And in that same sutta on The Noble Search, it says, to set rolling the wheel of Dharma, I beat the drum of the deathless. I was listening to a talk that he gave, Ajahn Sumedho, a few weeks ago, in which he described a car ride he took to the doctor recently. He's 88. He was going to find out the results of an eye test he had to see if he was going blind. He said he was listening to the sound of awareness in the van on the way to the doctor. And for him, the sound of silence as he rode is the sound of awareness. And as he listened, he said the anticipation of the test results receded into the background. Maybe a connection to the mystery that the Buddha points to. This awareness is something that has emerged for you over time with deeper and deeper understanding. So these are all aspects of this 10th picture. And I think we all have been touching aspects of these. For me, there's usually a predominant thread of learning in a period of time. And these are some possible themes that we may be practicing with now, or that maybe have produced insights and growth over the course of our time on the path. The abbot of Zen Mountain Monastery says the limits of the knowable are unknowable. And in the same vein, I would say that the limits of our learning are unknowable. I see a number of threads coming out of this last picture of where we are headed. And it makes me think of William Stafford's poem, The Way It Is. He talks about a single thread, but the way I see it right now, it's a braid. Sometimes we pick up one of the threads, sometimes another in our practice, and ultimately it's one thread. But for practical purposes, we can envision it a braid, all threads starting from the same point of liberation. So I'll just read William Stafford's poem, which I've read before. I think I read it back at the picture one. He says, there's a thread you follow. It goes among things that change, but it doesn't change. People wonder about what you are pursuing. You have to explain about the thread. But it is hard for others to see. While you hold it, you can't get lost. Tragedies happen, people get hurt or die, and you suffer and get old. Nothing you do can stop time's unfolding. You don't ever let go of the thread. So that's the end of picture 10. But now, if you would like, oh, I forgot to close the sharing. There we go. If you'd like to stay for the discussion, I'll put you in breakout rooms. And if anyone can't stay, we'd like you to stay. You can leave now, and then I will do the breakout rooms when I see who's remaining. And you can discuss any of the threads. I was thinking, if you thought about your path, how you've changed in relationship to any of these threads, what's up for you now? Or maybe you see something else, you see a different thread. Okay. I think everybody's back. So, is there someone who'd like to share out what went on in your rooms, or have anything to say? Yes, Claire, unmute yourself. Let's see. I hope.
Yeah. Just what I want to share is that we all commented on how thoughtful you were breaking down that poem, and how thought-provoking it was for us, and so much we learned by just the way that you teased those lines apart. Thank you so much. It was really a deep, just wonderful presentation.
Wow. I appreciate that. That kind of moves me that you said that. Did you want to share anything that that you know, personally work with?
Your thing about not being special.
Oh, yeah.
Like just being ordinary.
Yeah.
That's like, you know, that's like against everything I was raised with. And actually, so that brought me to this question that comes up for me a lot is how do we teach our children these concepts so they don't have to go blindly to age 30 and then start learning them and unlearning everything else. And that is one, for example. I mean, I think we specifically say to our children often, you are so special. Like, what do we say? You're just so ordinary. I don't know. You're just like any other person out there.
Yeah, it really is against, this is not what is on the loudspeakers, you know, this is not what's in the anthems. Yeah, it's a really important thing to think about. You know, I think that the benefits of being ordinary, I guess, would be what we would teach, you know, if you're ordinary, you connect to other people, you're like, you can, you know, you can see that your connection is that we're all ordinary. I don't know. I was a teacher and we were really told to make everybody seem special. So I've thought about that, you know, now in retrospect. Thank you for bringing that up. Yeah. Anybody else? I'm curious where you see yourself on the path in relation to the characteristics of, if anybody wants to share that, you know. Thank you, Jean. Brave Jean.
I'm going to beat the same drum. I really appreciated your presentation this morning. I felt it was straight from the heart. And you made yourself very vulnerable, and it was beautiful to see. So thank you for the way you went about it. I really enjoyed it. And if I have to slip off into some other safer subject, I'll say that I really liked your description of being lifelong learners. I shared with my group, I hope that the knowledge that I have right now isn't the end of it, the possibilities, because I'm feeling very stuck in some ways. And so the fact that I don't have to be perfect and that I can continue to learn is a good realization, just a good thing to admit. So thank you for your talk this morning.
Well, thank you, Jean. And I will just say that lifelong learner comes from a forgiveness, forgiveness phrases. And I can't remember. I know it's been on the website before for Brahma Viharas, but the person who put those together said, was using it for forgiveness for himself and for others. So he would say, I'm a learner still learning life's lessons, so that he would have more compassion for himself. And I found that really helpful for me as far as perfection goes and accepting. Yeah, so it just came to me when I was thinking of that, but that's where it came from.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you. And Lillian and Nikhil?
I appreciate when we talked about the, I think it was the five recollections. I'd never heard of this before. And that just seemed like a very meaningful and kind of concrete way to practice with some of those things in private. I think something that came up in our group is how we sometimes try to push off these thoughts of, you know, fact that we're going to die, and these, some of these other various like realities that, you know, we will face in our life. And that seemed like a really helpful way to kind of practice with that and get used to it. And I think, you know, kind of to your question of, you know, what were we personally working with, or like where do you see ourselves with the pictures? I think something that's been useful for me with them is being able to view maybe the path not as like a concrete step where I'm in one of these pictures for everything in my life, but I'm going to be faced with a lot of realities and a lot of events in my life. And at various events, sometimes I'll be in picture one, sometimes I'll be in picture 10. And sometimes it will be easy to transition and move along the path in certain things. And sometimes I'll be stuck in picture one for a really long time and not even realize I'm in picture one. So I think that's something that has been really useful with these pictures. I think it's maybe like kind of like the core thing I've taken out of them. And I think, you know, in regards to this 10th picture specifically, the line about I use no magic to extend my life, is, I think that's one I've been thinking about a lot, is the sense of, it's sometimes difficult for me when working with concepts of working in the gray area, I guess, of a concept where with that, you know, there's this ideal of, you know, knowing the reality that, you know, we're going to die. I think like maybe the realities of those five recollections, right? But also, you know, there's things we can do to make our lives better and improve them, right? Like trying to be healthier, trying to, maybe if we're sick, taking a drug, right? And how do you balance the ability? How do you balance, the mindfulness of the knowing the reality with also maybe the way in which we live our life? And how do you avoid the craving and the clinging for something while also, working with, I don't know if I'm articulating it well, but like kind of like working with them, and I guess. So yeah, that's kind of where it connects.
Oh yeah. Yeah. There's no easy answers. It's just, it's a process, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Of asking those questions, because it's, really, there's both, you know, there's the absolute and the relative. And in the relative, you know, we have to live our lives, and we will have pleasure in some things and not in others. And, you know, so there is just a humanness about our behavior. But then there's the backdrop of the, you know, like the recollections. We will lose everything. We will die. So, but at least being open to knowing, you know, that there's more, that there is, and exploring it and being able to talk about it with friends, spiritual friends, like we do here. It's, we're fortunate, I think. And thank you for sharing that part about the different stages, you know, that depending on what it is you're working with, you might be in a just totally lost, but I know there's some answer to, I feel, you know, faith in this, and I think I can move on and let go of the whip and the rope or whatever, you know, that it depends on what it is you're facing. And you can get knocked way back very quickly, depending on what it is. Yeah. So it looks like we're at the end of the time and need to finish up. So thank you for your sharing. And we're going to offer the merit of our practice today to all beings on the path or off the path. May all beings be free of suffering. May all beings be content just as they are. Find peace. Thank you, everybody.